As soon as the new dam had spanned the river, the Nile repossessed the sparse fields which surrounded the villages and wadis. And the last inhabitants of Egyptian Nubia definitely left their old homes in 1964.
5,000 square kilometres of Nubia were flooded. Famously, this meant many magnificent ancient relics had to be moved to higher ground, like the temples at Abu Simbel. Less well known is the fact that 100,000 Nubian people would be displaced, their villages flooded in the enormous new reservoir, Lake Nasser.
The majority are now established at Komombo, a modern city specially built for them north of Aswan. While in Nubia, the palms and sycamore trees which used to shade their homes now seem to float on the waters before the deserted houses.
We are feeling that we lost everything. Everything.
The intense poetry of these places now lived on only in the soon-to-vanish palm trees, while the rust-red waters crept into the lowest part of Nubia, where one could still see the openwork facades of the whitewashed houses.
They treat the Nubian as, you know, like just side effect, you know.
After more than a century of dam building on Nubian land, the Nubian diaspora now extends as far as Australia. A group of Nubian friends came together one evening in Canberra to share their stories.
My name is Ramadan Mahmoud. I am born in Egypt, 1962. My father and mother from Abu Simbel, from Nubia.
A couple of years after Ramadan Mahmoud was born, his family, along with 50,000 other Egyptian Nubians, were evacuated from their villages on the banks of the Nile. They were taken to Komombo, a town in the desert about 40 kilometres north of Aswan. Ramadan grew up hearing stories from his parents and grandparents about life before the move.
When we live with them, they are really very sad, because they move from their own country to Komombo. And people live from River Nile, and they bring them to the desert. And they really very, very sad. Always they talk about the Nubia, about their land, about their farm, about the River Nile, about the how to live with each other. When they come to Komombo, they lost everything, even the feeling they lost.
They lost their feelings?
Yes. They lost feelings. Like, I just took you from one country to desert. How you feel? You lost your feel, of course. For this reason, a lot of them, they died for this feeling.
My name is Munawar Sharif. I am a Nubian, Sudanese Nubian, from Wadi Halfa. I was born in Wadi Halfa just in 1967, the year which we moved to or transferred to New Halfa. When we moved from Wadi Halfa to new land, just I was newborn. Actually, I grew up in New Halfa.
The land flooded by the Aswan High Dam straddled the Egyptian-Sudanese border. This modern political border meant little to the Nubian people who lived there and shared a common culture and language. But when it came time to move, suddenly which side of the border you lived on determined your fate. Egyptian Nubians were sent to Komombo, near Aswan. Those on the Sudanese side, like Manawar Sharif, were sent far away into East Sudan.
New Halfa is just, it is in Eastern Sudan. It is far away, like 850 kilometers. It is totally different weather, totally different environment, and totally different land.
But not everyone in Manawar Sharif's family made the move planned for them by the government.
My grandfather, he refused to move. All the people in the village, they left to new land, but he refused to go.
So he stayed in Wadi Halfa?
in Wadi Halfa, yeah. Every year the waters come up, they move up until they reach the hill, and he stayed there until he died there.
How many people stayed like that?
Just him and my grandmother and my uncle and his wife.
Totally.
No, just four people.
Just four people.
Four people.
And what happened with your uncle?
Yeah, it what happened, you know, one night, you know, while they are sleeping, you know, the water is come inside their house, and the wall is fallen on the top of them, and my uncle wife, she died, you know.
Did they know how dangerous it was?
They know, but what are they going to do, you know? Yeah, what are they going to do? They don't want to move, you know? They don't want to move. It is, we believe, you know, is our land, you know, before, you know, 7,000 years. And just someone come and ask you to move. It's not fair, you know?
Even a river can drown. Vanished too under the waters of Lake Nasser was the Nubians' river, their Nile, which had flowed through every ritual of their daily life, had guided their philosophical thought, and had blessed the birth of every Nubian child for more than 5,000 years.
The river, it's part of our culture. The baby, when he born, they took him to the river. When a man, he get married, I remember the second day you have to go to the river with your wife and all the people around, and they threw salt on you, I think, and they sing
salt,
and all
salt
that.
Salt and wheat.
And wheat. It's part of the culture. And they just moved them from where they live, and they put them in the desert, and they didn't even provide them with good houses or...
So what happened for that generation that went through that experience?
They lost.
The old ones, you know... Many of them died, you know, just within 1 year, from depression, from, you know...
Homesick.
You know, in terms of Nubia, what was lost was so profound, was a way of life. It was a homeland for thousands of years that was to be lost. It was the Nubians' relationship to the Nile, a certain kind of self-sufficiency. To lose those villages was to also lose a way of life that was in complete grace with its surroundings, the way the houses were constructed. Their life was so connected to that land on the Nile.
In the ABC Library, I found a photographic book called Nubians in Egypt, published in 1973. It's filled with vivid pictures of old Nubia, life in the villages, the colourful houses, the proximity to the Nile. I tracked down the person who took the photographs for the book, Georg Gerster. He's a Swiss photojournalist who was in Egypt on assignment in the 1960s to cover the spectacular salvage of Abu Simbel for National Geographic. During his visits to the areas threatened by the dam, he became increasingly interested in the people packing up to leave their beautiful villages on the banks of the Nile.
Generally, among the Nubians, when you talk to them, and they were very sad. And, you know, if one really talks about the losses created by this inundation behind the dam. The loss, in my opinion, the major loss were the Nubian villages. From the point of view of architecture, without architects, I mean, building so adventurous and so fantastic, like Corbusier, like the best modern architecture done from mud. There were no burned bricks. It was just mud.
The The houses were like gardens sprung up in the sand after a rainfall, as if cut by Matisse's scissors, shapes of pure color, intense and separate, were painted onto the glowing white walls. Designs of cinnamon, rust, green, rose, Antwerp blue, tan, cream, madder, lamp black, sienna, and ancient yellow ochre, perhaps the oldest pigment used by man. Each a shout of joy.
If you went to Nubia in summer, when it was really incredibly hot, in those houses, you were very comfortable. They had an inbuilt air condition, and the inbuilt air condition was just to put the openings of the architecture in the direction of some prevailing winds. And then the houses were decorated by women, with sometimes with plates, china, and sometimes just with painting pictures. And since this was in the desert, they painted flowers, they painted greenery, and of course this was all washed away.
When the water came, the houses would dissolve like a bromide, but they would not even disappear into the river, which held a memory of them. For even the river would be gone.
The international community, you know, when this happened, they come to dig just to take our, you know, the thing from our land. But no one care about the people. Just they care about the, you know, these old things, which is good. But, you know, the first thing, you know, you have to care about the people, you know, who are living in that area.
The UNESCO was at the time not very helpful. They were fixing their attention on the antiquities, and it was easier, in a way, to sell the idea of saving the antiquities than to salvage the villages. You couldn't salvage the villages anyway, but at least to get a very thorough documentation.
And that didn't happen.
But that didn't happen.
Here, the people live close to the waters of the Nile. They are Nubian peasants, accustomed by tradition to lifelong labor in the fields. Their techniques were old when Egypt was young. Their customs, habits, clothes, and tools are old.
Adjectives to describe Nubian people? Well, I think misunderstood might be one. Heroic would be another one. Noble achievers.
Richard Loban is an ethnographer who's made the study of Nubia, ancient and contemporary, his life's work. He speaks of a kind of amnesia about Nubia in Egypt and beyond.
The achievements are so great that you can't imagine that they wouldn't be widely recognized by world curriculum designers. On the other hand, when you look for how they're represented, they're more often than not represented at all.
A little-known period of ancient Egyptian history is the 25th dynasty, when Nubia ruled Egypt. This was the time of the Black Pharaohs.
Even in the Bible itself, which has historical problems, to be sure, the 25th dynasty is called Egyptians. But they simply were not Egyptians. They were Nubian people. Taharqa and the 25th dynasty, they were 100% Nubians. They were the Black Pharaohs, unquestionably.
The record shows that the relationship between Egypt and its southern neighbor hasn't always been dominated by Egypt.
Since the history is 5,000 years long, you find every conceivable relationship, from collegial, from friendly, cordial, collaborative, brotherly, and then there's also the times where it was colonial. So almost everything that one could imagine did, in fact, at one time or another, happen. Egyptians colonized Nubia half a millennium, and then, of course, Nubians did occupy Egypt for something less than a century. But this history at critical points is simply overlooked, marginalized, skipped over, or misrepresented in one way or another. Even in the museology, there's a certain latent politics you know, keeping the position of Nubians more or less at arm's length. For example, in the Cairo Museum, at the main entrance, there's a frieze which indicates episodically some of the prominent kings. It lists from the Old Kingdom and the Middle Kingdom, these epics from 4th to 6th dynasty, 11th and 12th dynasty. And then it finally gets up to the 22nd dynasty. And right where the 25th dynasty might be, in other words, adjacent to the 22nd, it's not there. There's a door where tens of thousands of tourists enter daily. And then when you get to the other side of the door jamb, you're already onto the 26th dynasty. So it's really actually, you could say, architectural vanishing powder. The 25th dynasty just simply vanishes. And in a lower eastern hall of the National Museum, there is the stele of Pianchi, who conquered Egypt. But no tour group ever goes there. The signage is extremely poor. And this is essentially a major achievement of Nubians in Egypt, and it's just neglected.
And how strong is Nubian culture today?
Well, Nubian identity remarkably remains strong. It's preserved by that historical record. It's preserved by the archaeological record. The language still does go on, particularly in Aswan. You'll hear people speaking Kenzie Nubian. The Egyptian educational system is not particularly strong in multiculturalism. There's an effort by Nubian activists to preserve Nubian language in various writing forms, either in Arabic or Old Nubian or in Coptic letters, but it's not given much encouragement by the state.
My name is Osam Kairi. I'm from Sudan, Nubian. I studied in Egypt, in Cairo, and I never learned in school anything about my culture. I have to go and do my search and read and educate myself. And I was in high school, and I see a gentleman, Mukhtar. He was standing next to a boat with writing letters. And I was wondering, that's nice. I remember that the hieroglyph letters. And I say, which letter that you're writing? And he looked at me and said, where are you from? And I say, I'm Nubian. And I say, shame on you, you don't know your letters. And that shocked me. That's my letters. And I have my own, because I thought our language, it's only language, but you can write it. But he took me aside and tell me, no, we have history.
When people are living in their native homes, speaking their language, they don't need to specially mobilize their sentiments of group solidarity. And there's probably more effort to reclaim a Nubian cultural essence now because of the crisis situation into which Nubian culture was projected. So we do have dictionaries of Nubian language that have been preserved, dictionaries of Nubian place names where the places are actually under the water. So it's a complex dialectic of construction and destruction more or less occurring simultaneously.
What's more, at long last, international interest in ancient Nubia is growing. The Louvre in Paris is about to host its first exhibition on the 25th dynasty, when Nubia reigned over the entire Nile Valley. And rumour has it that in Hollywood, the African-American star Will Smith is developing a film about the most important of the Nubian pharaohs, Taharqa, starring himself, of course. But for Nubians in Sudan today, recent history is repeating itself.
Here in Kashbar at the Third Cataract, the Sudanese government has plans to build the first of two additional dams.
here, now it is Nasser Lake here.
Yeah.
Okay? So it's Nubian, all these areas underwater now.
Yes.
Now they want to build another one here, just here.
Manawar Sharif and Osam Khairi are showing me what the new dams will mean for Sudanese Nubians.
So all this area is going to be under the water. And they're going to want to build Kajbar here. So all this area is going to be under the water.
Flooded.
Three dams in our land. We don't want it.
Our concern is about the Nubians, where we stand from all this.
The Nubians demonstrated against the project in 2007. Several died or were wounded in violent clashes with the police.
The lack of consultation has been a very problematic issue for the Kajbar Dam and the Dal Cataract Dam. Those dams have not been made yet, and I think Nubians, if they were consulted, if it were demonstrated that they would have benefits and compensation, they might not be really opposed to them. But the lack of consultation, which 3 years ago reached the point of a major demonstration, which was subject to, you know, military repression, loss of life and so forth, and jailing, that was a really sad example of how poorly consultative this was.
Even though the new Sudanese dams are small by comparison with Egypt's high dam, the social impact is identical. In fact, there's even less in the way of transparency or consultation or resettlement schemes for displaced people this time around. Has nothing been learnt from the experience of the past? Richard Loban.
Sudan in 1960 and Sudan in 2010 is just a completely different place. Major political events, major conflicts, major discoveries of oil, major presence of Chinese. The influence of U.S. has oscillated from extremely strong to extremely marginal as it is today. So there have been so many changes and issues that relate to Sudan. It's sort of hard to compare each of these quite different periods, 40, 50 years apart.
And what about the Nubians who lost their villages when Egypt's big dam flooded their land in the 1960s? What would justice look like for them today? Mohsen Abbas.
Justice, we always have the hope to go back again one day. Even it's not even in our generation, next generation, whatever generation will be. But we have to prepare everything for them to go back, because it is our land and it's our right to keep it, and it's our right to live on it like any other, you know, like indigenous people around the world.
Now they're building some villages beside the lake, and they bring people, you know, from, you know, the Egyptian people. But when the Nubian people, they said, we want to go back, they said, no, this village is not for you. It's our land. But when they said, we want to go, this is our land, the governor of Aswan told them, your land is under the water. If you want to go to your land, go under the water.